Does anyone have a question or anything to share?
I do. While driving a couple weeks ago, collided with a black bear on I-40. And I was able to see her far enough that I could slow down, that the impact, she was knocked out, but she got up and walked away. So I've been trying to sit with the energy of this bear. And I think this desire to like be with that, and right now also just being with this process and sleeping a lot and feeling like I'm in hibernation mode. There's two things. I think there's one, that there's part of me that wants to give myself full permission to like be with this bear energy and just totally go with that. And then there's another part of me that has this question about, you know, wanting to control my experience of this retreat and wanting to be open. So that delicate balance of having an intention and wanting to play with that intention, and then also being open to what is. And right now I feel like it's because it is sort of the beginning and I'm just trying to like get here, that, but it keeps coming up. It came up yesterday and I held off on asking about it, and it's there again today.
Yeah.
So the permission and the question about holding the intention and being present to what is.
Mm-hmm. Great. Could y'all hear? So I love how you answered yourself in a way that, since there isn't an answer to your question, because the way I mean that you answered yourself is that you pointed out to us how it's not a clear-cut situation, and so that there could be room for how bear comes up, and there could be a craftiness of wanting being with bear to be a certain way that's not just bear coming up, and being onto that. And then the whiff of just open and the whiff of control. And so in a way we can just think of the bear who knows how to rest and has a good nose, getting just these whiffs and not necessarily acting on anything yet. And maybe we find out afterwards how it was to be with bear, how it was to be with open, how it was to be with the sense of control. In a way, we can take the contrast from where the retreat has been the last maybe 7 years to here. If we were in the stone house, it would be like, yeah, be the bear, you know? And it could encourage that how I imagined being with the bear was gonna be, and not the openness. And here it's like, where could I be the bear? I did find some good bear spots today.
Yeah.
Not too far away, like just nearby. But it could be helpful so that we can really find where's that coming from when bear comes up? Is there some part of it that's some shock that just needs some digesting? And some part of it a connection that's not only about that collision? And probably it would then be like how you discover yourself already connected to what bear means to you, and letting that go from there, rather than sort of, it would be easy to have good entertainment making up being with bear, and it's not really bear, it's my mind. One of my favorite subjects, just these weeks or months, is really getting to know what avoidance feels like, and really getting to know what actually, I understand now more why Gautam Buddha used so much negative, like to say non-avoidance. It's not so juicy. But what do we call that? What do we call that? It's not quite presence.
Tolerance?
Not really. Not how I understand. Tolerance to me is a little bit like, well, I do like sunflowers, but for example, I don't like sunflowers, but it's sweet that somebody, so I'll put up with it. Non-avoidance. What I mean by avoidance is not being here, rather than not being with something. The way yesterday I called survival strategy. So avoidance of actually, what is this? That avoidance of being ourselves, being with what is, being what is. Which is a funny thing to say, because how can we avoid being what is? We can't really avoid being what is, because we keep being what is the whole time. And that can be a helpful clue and kind of relaxing also. We can never really not be what is. So even avoidance is coming up within and as part of what is. But to get the whiff of when I'm kind of where I really know I'm needed is where I'm really not going. And even though I might act out, I'm doing everything I can to heal this or whatever. But I'm not just staying with. And I think that there are good reasons. Not only that it's intense or sometimes painful, mostly it's just intense if we actually go there. It's not usually that painful. It's not as painful as the avoidance, usually. When we really get in touch, it's intense usually, more than anything. But it's also when we get in touch with what? We have to really acknowledge from the beginning that there's not a something that we're getting in touch with, so that we're not confused. When we get in touch and there's not a something, that's true. So we might get in touch with, different people have mentioned past things coming to mind over and over and over again in the last however many hours have we been together? 48? And so getting in touch with what's the root of that, all that thinking or feeling. We can get in touch with that root, but then we get there and it's not a thing. There's not this thing that we can just sort of look at or read or... And then that very sort of gesture, if we can call it that, of getting in touch or staying with also makes a difference, makes it even more shifty. And so I thought of talking about emptiness today. And then I realized really what it can be called is shiftiness instead of emptiness. And so we can have open the possibility to investigate what it feels like when there's a shift, like we feel we shift into alignment, or we shift into quiet, or we shift into a sense of knowing myself without description. So leaving it open that there's not a clear-cut answer to be with the bear, be with the openness, watch out for that controlling, the control freak. Can help it be really likely that through openness we shift into bear, whether we realize in that moment or not. Or also through bear we shift into openness. And even, it sounds almost terrible, but also through really entering, okay, control freak, finding openness and bear. So it is important that we invite everyone and everything to the party. Or it just goes on and on and on and on. So if you be open to feel when there came a shift that might have been a sense of perspective or solution or creativity, if you're into doing something creative like writing, drawing, dancing, music, etc. How do you get to your creativity? And I'm curious if anyone feels a response that they could actually say out loud. Or if you feel around, there was a kind of, I could pick up bread on the way home and then I don't have to go out twice or ask somebody else, or just a shift where the equations reduce. So it's now if anyone has a response, and also during the days. And also, what does a shift feel like? And it could be a simple shift of, oh yeah, can breathe. Anything come to mind?
A lot of times for me, it's just giving up on all of it. Mm-hmm. Just doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Is there any example that comes to mind?
I think I've even actually given this example before. I've lost my pen. I can't find my pen any place. And I want to write this thing down. And I want to write it down right now. And I don't want to forget it. And I can't find my pen. Mm-hmm. And so the way I have found to find my pen is to forget about it. And then there it is. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. In one of my favorite books, which is possibly someone's creation and possibly a recording of a question and answer between teacher and student, just happens that the student is called Ram, who's considered to be a god, but it's a conversation. In a book called the Yog Vashisht. And they talk about our our network of hope and fear. Like, I hope I find the pen, I'm afraid I won't find it. I'm also afraid what it means about me that I can't find my pen, etc. And so the pressure is on and there's no way we can find the pen. we don't have access to our equipment when the pressure is on. And this is something I want to leave for you for maybe a couple days, few days, to start to feel for. Because it sounds like, oh, hope and fear. But to start to feel how much it tends to run the show, this hope-fear network. And so in the text, it talks about the hope-fear network and how we can fall through the cracks or the gaps into aliveness. And there's a way that the aliveness can be called emptiness for a few reasons that we can go into a little bit. And one way is this shiftiness. So there's one way that the aliveness is very dynamic. And that's one reason that we have the meditative movement first thing in the morning. Because it can be so easy that we still think, even though we're lying down, that we talk about sitting. With a sense of, I'm sitting. And I'm really doing something. And sitting can be really good, feel very free. But we're lying down or we're sitting, and there's something about a call of stillness that's sweet and beautiful. And we can keep our bare nose ready to catch the whiff of control and repression. And so just having the chance to notice the contrast between how is my sense of awareness when I'm still, sitting or lying down, and how is it to be aware while my body is in movement. We get tangled up when we're sitting and lying down, and there's just the mind movement for the most part. And there's this very simple movement of the breath that we tend to get caught up in our own version of that rather than the actual raw living breathing. And so just having the chance to be with, okay, awareness, and the body can go any which way. I don't know where it's going to go next. Because with walking also, it can be almost as stiff and repressive if we've just come from being still. And we're with my anticipated imagined step and my version of lifting my foot rather than the actual unexpected, simple, unpredictable living quality or experience. And it's very encouraging to practice awareness in, let's call it, chaotic movement, unpredictable movement. Because we find that there is awareness, and it's a kind of easy awareness. It's already there. And it has room for this and for that, and it has room for fast and slow. And it has room for more than just the movement. Very, very fine awareness that's direct. And enlivening. And so then we get friendly with a part of us that's wide and enlivening and built in. And though it's built in, with practice, the capacity grows. It grows wider and more subtle and more deep. And we start to notice that it's in myself, the not wish to be stuck with a particular identity for too long, or to be stuck with a particular routine for too long, for just its own timing. It's in myself. It's not that someone else from outside needs to kind of kick my butt or something. In myself, there's also not looking for excitement and changing, you know, shuffling the cards all the time, just as an avoidance. But feeling in ourself, what really it is there's this tiny little fine point connected to this wide, subtle awareness. That loves the unpredictableness and is a good leader. We could even say the good leader. It can even handle control freak. And so through allowing our love of stillness and our love of awareness that can handle all the shifts, which also starts to allow us to be honest about what's happening in stillness. It's so dynamic, without losing any of its stillness. So there can be this utter stillness. You would not like to move a tiny finger. Tiny movement of the little finger would break something. But we have grown to be able to allow the whole experience of that stillness, which includes the power. And it includes transformation. So yesterday, at the very end, I read the poem called The Storm. It's within ourselves an awareness that death is happening. So at the beginning of the poem, Wendell and Tanya are in their bed, laying in bed as in a tomb. And it's dark, and then it's bright, dark. And there's a glimpse of the birth-wet world, shining as even at midday, even at noon, it never has. There's a readiness and even a love of death that's not sick. It's not that hatred of life kind of love of death or fascination with death that seems to be, it seems like every time they're getting more that way in this culture. The movies, one of my friends in India was like, but they only do black and white movies in your country. And I was like, what? No, they're really, I was like, oh, right. They're really into that dark look. And once we get into something, it's hard to get out of it because people think this is what people want. And the people who are making the movies either aren't allowed to, like, let's put some color. Or they're afraid to because maybe no one will come. So not the fascination with death, that kind of drains the color out, but a love of death. I managed not to bring Wendell today. I got Jane. This is Jane Hirschfield, a poem called Ripeness. Ripeness is what falls away with ease. Not only the heavy apple, the pear, but also the dried brown strands of autumn iris from their core. To let your body love this world that gave itself to your care in all its ripeness, with ease, and will take itself from you in equal ripeness and ease, is also harvest. And however sharply you are tested, this sorrow, that great love, it too will leave on that clean knife. To let your body love this world that gave itself to your care in all of its ripeness with ease, and will take itself from you in equal ripeness and ease, is also harvest. However sharply you're tested, this sorrow, that great love, it too will leave on that clean knife. Can you feel how the love of it all, including the love of death, is different from drama? The love of drama. How in the poem it's just undramatic. That things get heavy with sunshine and juice, and things get dry equally in fall. If we can feel what our avoidance is of, what are we avoiding? When we get the whiff of avoidance, not wanting to be here. So not wanting to be here as it is, we could say, like a fascination with death rather than a love of death. Not quite being willing to be here as it is based on a misunderstanding of what it is, of what is. So I want you to have the chance to know that in your experience, to feel for what is avoidance of just being here as it is. And what exactly is going on in that avoidance? And it's not like, if we could imagine more like the bear is sniffing out her winter home rather than sniffing out some prey. We're not like stalking prey when we're trying to find what's the avoidance? How does it feel and what is it of? What are we avoiding? Does that make any sense? So we have the big hint that hope and fear are part of avoidance, or maybe are avoidance, let's see. And that we can, it's possible as human beings to drop out of that rigid network. And what do we drop into? One of the beautiful teachings in the Buddhist tradition is that when we drop in, Wendell Berry talked about falling into the fund of things. And in the fund of things, the wideness, the delight, and the changing sense of time. Falling into, through the beginning, through coming back to the beginning, as we talked about this morning, we get our feet, or we get a whiff of beginning less and less. And dropping in the fact that things are continually shifting and affecting each other. When we drop in, moves towards what's life-sustaining, moves towards depth and freedom. When we're kind of trapped, and we kind of like being trapped, we think we should be trapped in that cage of hope and fear, and as that cage of hope and fear, then the shiftiness works in a way that's that downward spiral. Hope ends up destroying us. Success destroys us. Failure destroys us. Fear destroys us. And dropping in, we're in touch with the indestructible. It's so slippery and so shifty and so alive that it just keeps finding a way. And what is the difference in our feeling, like not emotional feeling and not only physical feeling, but the difference in the subtle feeling between the slipperiness of that, how thing, oh, we took a step that we thought was going to fall, and but we had to take that step, and then we found the ground in a way we never have found the ground before. And the ground found us, for us. That slipperiness, unexpectedness, that kind of shiftiness, to the slipperiness of postponing a little bit longer before I really get in touch with myself and just stay here. So one of the things that can shift dropping into that unwired aliveness, where unprogramming can happen, deprogramming and unprogramming, is a simple shift of something happens. Let's say there's something uncomfortable in the body, to just keep it as simple as we can. How many people have had something uncomfortable in the body in the last 48 hours? Just so you know, it's not only you, okay? And then what was the jump assumption before you could realize? Which is kind of what an assumption is, right? About that. Like, what? Yeah, something's wrong. Yeah. And then something's wrong, and then? Is it my fault? Is it their fault? Or what? Is it just the fault of life or God or what? And how does it feel to be at fault? Or that there's something or someone's at fault? So something's wrong. How does that feel? What's the configuration in the body when something's wrong? What's the configuration in the mind body when something's wrong? Not enough. Not enough. Tightness. Stuck. Exactly. Thank you. Not enough tightness, stuck. Just a sec. Remind me if I forget, but I want to get to them. And how about that hurts? And not like shrugging, like, don't be bothered, or don't worry, or don't, it's nothing, brush it off. But just that that's uncomfortable. That the end. And then that, if we can end that sentence there, that this is uncomfortable in this very precise way. So then, wow, precision starts to come in. And then that end, the end, this is uncomfortable, the end. We get to actually, oh, this is like that, and oh, I didn't notice that it was so fiery, or that it spread out to my arm, or that it actually seems to start from my pelvic floor. And then that end is the beginning. That seeming, maybe the discomfort felt tight, and we actually get in touch with tight, and we find all this space, and we find this aliveness and shiftiness in that stuck, tight, not enough experience. So having not enough tightness and stuck together as the basic description of what's uncomfortable. There's some of my teachers define pain in that way. Pain equals stuck. Especially around communication, that not necessarily verbal communication, but there's pain is like a calling. Let's be more in touch here. We need more information. In a feeling way. We can then use the physical example to where it's more mental or emotional, uncomfortable. Is it tight, stuck, not enough? Is that really the experience, basically? Almost always. And very similarly, if we can, okay, that's uncomfortable, the end. We can let it be as powerful as it is. And that power is not like burning against itself, brake and accelerator. It's having a chance to shift in a way that's about life instead of control. Lenny G.
What I experience now a lot is just absolute boredom. Mm-hmm. And I can avoid that. I can play my favorite computer game. I've got a ton of movies to watch. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do any of that. Mm. I could call so-and-so, I don't want to do that. What would I say to her? And so I feel stuck with the negative nothingness, the boredom nothingness.
Yeah.
I guess sometimes I think, well, I could just sit with it.
Yes, please. But maybe don't sit with it.
What?
Maybe don't sit with it. Maybe lie with it.
Yeah.
But yes, good. Boredom is a form of aggression, aversion, turning away from. And if there could be, so just like with the uncomfortable something or other in the body, the uncomfortable something or other in the mind state. If we can allow it not to be wrong, just boredom, it's uncomfortable, the end. This is one of the things, it's hard, but it's kind of the easiest thing that's within our hands to play with, within our hands, so to speak. It's something we can practice. It's taking off the layers of judgment around what we experience. So boredom is uncomfortable. We've been talking from the first night. Is hard bad? Is uncomfortable wrong? We're kind of trying to unweave that conditioning and find out what is uncomfortable. We're feeling for the goodness, actually trusting that there is goodness in the uncomfortable boredom. And I feel very strongly, knowing I've known Lenny for at least 15 years or more, right?
Yeah.
Or for maybe even 20, from back to Bovai. Yeah, okay, 14 years, right? Where are we? Yeah. I feel very good about you exploring boredom. So there might be other uncomfortable things someone else might have that is like, let's just let that rest for a while and really practice strongly tuning into appreciation of beauty every time you see it, feeling your feet, because the track to that negativity, that difficulty, that pain is too well worn. It's become too habitual.
To assign negativity to it, you
mean? No, just that we get interested in that pain by habit, by programming, by wiring. And it is an avoidance. And so it can sound like I'm really working on myself, digging deep. It really hurts. So just like hard isn't necessarily bad, it isn't necessarily good. But so that's why I'm just saying, Lenny, please, good, yes. Feel, how do you know you're bored? Where do you feel it,
well,
in your body?
I'm just tired of it.
I've
surrounded myself with beautiful things.
Are you talking about all the retreat now or mostly your daily life?
No, my daily life.
Okay.
Only.
So I want you to know, and he mentioned a little bit before, like he does his yoga and he does his meditation and he reads his holy books and et cetera. All that's the morning.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about containing a little bit so that energy can stream through the afternoon to his evening bike ride. So he's got this awesome yogi lifestyle going on in Missouri. And we're working to for containment for this afternoon time and maybe the late night time. So I think if you feel any boredom here, really cherish that moment and feel where you feel it in the body. Don't try to remember feeling bored, but when it comes up, really cherish the chance to actually taste the boredom and what you feel in your body where. And if you feel a buzzing somewhere, okay, stay there for a while and let me know how it goes. We've got plenty of time. Yeah?
Can you talk a little more about when not to dig deeper and go into that?
Yes. Because I've already mentioned how much I'm not into general rules, I can mention a general rule. And that is 10%, maybe 20% of the day on retreat could be devoted to going into something. That leaves 80 and 90% to not go into something. And that practice of changing the channels. So when there's a story that keeps coming up or symptoms that keep coming up or whatever it is, sometimes we can really change the channel and it's like a radio that you don't get any static and you're not getting another channel, it's just that one channel. You can change the channel and you just feel your feet is a good place to start. Or you just let your out-breath, you let your breathing come down. You let your anus relax. Those are like three simple things that help our alarm system come down. Because we talked about de-addicting from alarm, essentially. So gradually, without a direct confrontation with the alarm system, we're just, by the way, feeling the feet, by the way, relaxing the anus, feeling the breath drop down, all the jinshin that we've done. Any finger. Also that potential friendship with ourselves as being one of the best friends of our lifetime, being inside. We can find key words and we'll do more of this tomorrow in together in the guided meditation. But you can already feel for a key word that you really resonate with, that really rhymes with your deepest knowing of what's important in life. And so that alarm system is on about that particular subject or event or whatever, or dynamic. And then, okay, we first of all notice that, that's big. And it's big, partly we can really get, partly why it's so big is that whatever notice that the alarm system is on is not in the alarm system. It might still be kind of out of breath. But to notice all of that is alarm system. We're starting to have a little space from the, there's something else that can notice that. Sometimes we can really cleanly change channels, and sometimes, many times, we hear two channels at once. So we hear the alarm system, the mind is freaking out, I've got to get out of here, I'm going crazy, or this is not for me, I should be doing real meditation, or I should be doing a marathon or something else. Especially, I think I warned you, that this afternoon and evening it's normal if that's happening. It's kind of a threshold of when we kind of go in to retreat more, right now. So we can hear that and we can also hear the birds. We can also feel the breath a little bit. And it's only by getting messy that we actually experientially can start to have a better guess, and sometimes even a knowing of what is rewounding the wound and alarming the alarm, and when is it actually the ripeness that enough factors are available to actually bring tenderness and containment, holding, of what has all along only needed that and never got it. But even if I know it just needs tenderness and holding, that doesn't mean that that's present. So we do what we can to bring that, those factors into place so that that can happen. And so as Lenny said yesterday, a lot of times we're making a best guess. And that it's really good, it's very simple and good that making a best guess, sometimes we'll find out that wasn't the best guess. Next time I do it differently. But how could I know that if I didn't do that? It's as with every other learning, but much more subtle and electric and close to home. So if we can give ourselves that permission that it can be that messy, then we can really kind of get on with things. Another part of exploring what is a destructive fascination with the difficult, with pain, with the past, etc., and what is life force coming through and for healing and growing from there. We can start to feel for any time that we notice ourselves getting busy to get away from just being here. Any time we get the whiff of avoidance, if we can start to feel what's the root of that. In Buddhist language, they talk about that movement away, the avoidance, as a kind of thirst. So we don't need to blame thirst. Like, it's just thirsty, but it's going the wrong way. It's not going towards the water. And if we can find out the root of the thirst, and Cheryl mentioned a sense of lack, or Kathleen mentioned something's wrong, like it feels uncomfortable, it must be wrong, something's wrong. And it's really our fear that something's wrong, a fear that we're wrong, a fear that it's wrong, that kind of gets us off balance and disconnected from a tiny trickle of trust that could carry through. So there's several factors, there's several human qualities that we can purposely try to grow. And even when we're a bit caught up or very caught up in the hope and fear network, so we're tense, we're alarmed, we feel anxiety or stress or not enough, we're stuck. And we might be stuck in being really, really active. So we're not taking it literally. We're using our intelligence here. What feels stuck could be someone who's really looks really creative. And we can still unweave ourselves from that network of hope and fear with certain qualities that have so much livingness in them that they help us fall out of the network. They help us fall into ourselves. So one of them we can call presence, just being here and receiving. We can also call it receptivity, where we actually let the world and me be one thing. We let it be together, or not two, not one, better description. And we allow that enjoyment of the different flavors of being together with the world. Second one is a kind of curiosity. So we can, sometimes when we feel really stuck, we can try to be curious on purpose. We can try to find a question to ask. We notice we're stuck, so what would be the question about this? And other times there's a spontaneous curiosity or a sense of wordless curiosity, like, wow. The Indian word, when they're listening to music, when it's really good, they say, wah. And I love that word. And then energy, which has a certain penetrating quality. So not to be afraid. Here we are resting and chilling out, letting go, getting loose. We're letting the mind be even daydreamy so that the part of us that is so used to being on and being sharp and being clever can kind of get sort of drunk, actually, and get out of the way so that our real intelligence comes through. But not to be alarmed when it's not only all dreamy and loose, but there's some fierceness and passion. And it can be pointed and it can get all the way through to the end. It can see all the way through to the bottom. It can actually see the root of all of our running away from ourselves. It can see it. And allowing that clear seeing to be that precise and whole-bodied is the end of suffering. Just that. The lightning flash that's brighter than noon. And then it doesn't need to stay all lit up. We've already seen it. And then there's, the best translation is rapture. It's kind of like big girl, big boy word for meditation. We might think, maybe someday I'll get there. But it's just letting the body be happy. Letting the body have its happiness. So sometimes happiness is there, or even just a little sense of openness. And you can go and look for this, and it's not fake. There would be where we pretend to be happy. We all know that. Who has not pretended to be happy ever? But sometimes we feel pretty bored or we feel pretty low or whatever. And we can go and feel throughout the body, is there somewhere that feels okay or good? Yes. And if I stay there in that openness and enjoy that. And then we start to be okay with the body having its happiness. And the body starts to grow its capacity for that happiness. And that keeps growing. And so in the text, they talk about hair standing on end and thrills running up and down the body. And it's allowed. It's not some far off saintly thing. It's a really earthly. And even though the big bells have rung, I'll just mention for now the three more. There are seven factors. They're called the seven factors of awakening. So presence and curiosity, or wa. And energy, that's it's called virya. And so it's actually related to the word virile or virility. It can pounce. Rapture, so letting the body have happiness. And then there's ease. Isn't that nice? Or actually all that we're doing here as a main emphasis, so restfulness. And a deep knowing that it's not in my doing to make the important things happen. They're already with me. So that would be, if rapture is letting the body have its happiness, ease is like letting the body mind have its knowing of deep okayness and already being equipped. And just a matter of being able to feel our way along to the equipment and practice using it. And then there's, and it follows quite naturally from there being energy and happiness in the body and deep ease, like a total looseness. That then there can be an okayness with, and also a kind of firmness in not being moved by habit or biology without the permission of the livingness or the aliveness. Does that make sense? And not being held back through habit or biology without the permission of aliveness. And just that, so the active and the passive are quiet, those pushes and pulls of conditioning and also biological programming are not affecting our life enough to enough of an extent that we can really stream deep. And it's a kind of almost being gone, but it's not a disappearing or an escape. We're so in that we're almost gone. And it rhymes with our really simple literal experience that we've mentioned a couple times of, okay, we can feel the arm, we can feel it from the outside, we can feel it from the inside. We can recover that sense of embodiment that we're allowed to be here, we're allowed to be happy here. And we're still not, we can never be really sure what this arm is, which is part of the emptiness of it. So even that, the texture of my skin, the temperature of it, it's all flashes, a stream of flashes. That's awesome. That we can dive in and disappear in a way that's really being here. And if we know that it's like that, then there's less sense that we got to get out of here. This is too confusing because I'm here and I'm not here. We know that really being here is also kind of being gone. As I knew myself, I'm not present. And then lastly is upekkha, so it's equanimity. That we're, it's partly even that love of death and love of storm that's not a love of drama. It's not only that I can tolerate the shiftiness, but that I love the shiftiness and I love how life can work with that and keep finding a way. So let's go to dinner. With our alarm system down. May our practice and our lives be fully dedicated to a love of life and death and all beings. Letting our energy, full energy, be devoted to the liberation of all, including ourselves.